You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Opening words are from Joseph Priestley, scientist, theologian and philosopher. He appears up there in John Dowie's painting to the left of Isaac Newton. He wrote, "I stand in the need of liberty myself, and I wish that every creature of God may enjoy it equally with myself." We'll now have the story for all ages, which Janet will give, so if all the young Unitarians would like to come up to the front.
I was a kid. It was quite common for people to worry about whether they would go to heaven or hell when they die. Nowadays, lots of Unitarians wouldn't bother about that, because after all, no one knows what happens when we die. And it's important to be kind and fair to make the world a better place for all the people who will live on after you, as well as your family. People as well as your family and friends and neighbours right now. So I, this is Jenny's words, am going to tell you a 20th century American story about a student who was studying to be a minister. And the only person from the olden days in the story is Jesus. The student stood up to test Jesus. "Jesus," he said, "what exactly do I have to do to go to heaven?" Jesus said to him, "Well, what's written in the Bible? What did your Sunday club teachers tell you?" He answered, "Love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "That's right. Do that and you'll be saved from going to hell, whatever hell is." But the student, wanting to know if that meant you had to be kind to every person who might come to his church when he graduated, or whether he had a bit of a choice in the matter himself, so he asked Jesus, And who exactly is my neighbour? Jesus replied, a man was travelling from Buckhead to downtown Atlanta and was jumped by a bunch of gang members who mugged him, beat him, took his wallet and the car and left him half dead. Now, by chance, a famous doctor from the city was riding by, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. He didn't want to get sued if his first aid procedures were not up to scratch. After all, he was a brain surgeon, not a common or garden paramedic. He was much more important, skilled and knowledgeable than an ambo or a nurse. Then there was an influential lawyer passing by. When he came by the place where the stranger lay in pain and he saw him, he also passed by as though he didn't even see him. He didn't want to risk getting COVID-19 and had to stay home from work, which he was remarkably well paid to do. But then a Muslim man of Arab descent, while travelling to the nearby mosque for prayer, came near him. And when he saw him, he was moved with compassion. He went to him and bandaged his wounds as best as he could to stop his bleeding. Then he put him in his own car, brought him to an emergency clinic, and sat all day with him until he was seen by a doctor. He didn't leave his side all night. The next day, he took out his credit card, gave it to the lady at the desk of the clinic, and said, I'll pay whatever his medical costs are. If he owes anything else, just send me the bill. Which of these three do you think was a neighbour to the man who was mugged and left for dead? The Muslim man who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. I told this to a friend of mine yesterday, and she said, my husband collapsed in the gutter outside our house because he's got diabetes. And there were people who walked on the other side of the road without looking after him. It wasn't until two boys from across the road came to look after him that he discovered who his neighbors were. Lord Griffiths, who is the Good Samaritan today? Lord Griffiths is the chairman of the Centre for Enterprise Markets and Ethics, and he retold this story of the Good Samaritan. He analysed it and applied it to contemporary Britain when he addressed the Chiltern Prayer Breakfast in 2015. It was prescient, for soon after the media was bursting with stories after the breakup of the Schengen Agreement and the subsequent migration crisis. The most notable images from that time are probably the abandoned lorry in Austria carrying 71 bodies, capsized boats in the Mediterranean, and the body of 3-year-old Syrian Aylin Kurdi being carried on a Turkish beach. Lord Griffiths wrote, when we pose the question, who is my neighbour, are we not also seeking the timeless quest for a loophole to divide the world into neighbours and non-neighbours, the deserving poor, the undeserving poor, the refugee, the economic migrant, the freedom fighter, the terrorist, the needy, the scrounger, the shirker, the worker. The lawyer was searching for a clear definition which would set a precise boundary between those who deserved help and those who did not. I won't quote the whole article as he goes into great detail about the cultural context of the story, but he also tells the story of a homeless woman who turned to a country vicar who promised to pray for her.
Later, she wrote this poem and handed it to the regional officer of the Housing and Homeless Charity. I was hungry, and you formed a humanities group to discuss my hunger. I was imprisoned, and you crept off quietly to your chapel and prayed for my release. I was naked, and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt and thanked God for your health. I was homeless, and you preached to me of the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I was lonely, and you left me alone to pray for me. You seem so holy, so close to God, but I am still very hungry and lonely and cold.
The address which I'm giving this morning has been written by Jenny Dyster and it's entitled The Golden Rule. The Golden Rule is the principle of treating others as you would want to be treated. It is a maxim that is found in many religions and cultures. Sometimes it comes in a positive version, always treat others as you would like others to treat you. Equally important is the negative version. Do not do unto others what you would not like them to do to you. And finally, the most spiritually woke or empathic form. Look into your own heart, discover what it is that gives you pain, and then refuse under any circumstances whatsoever to inflict that pain on anyone else. The Good Samaritan is an exemplar of the Golden Rule. Anyone who is mugged and dumped on a roadside would want to be rescued. Why don't we just go to the rescue of the injured or the unfortunate or the sick? Well, life can be dangerous. Healthcare professionals have died after contracting COVID-19. A vehicle breakdown or a person lying on a road may not be what it appears to be. What if it is a trap set by a robber or a kidnapper? Lord Griffiths, whose words Janet just read, put the question to his fellow citizens at the time of the refugee crisis in Europe. Who is the Good Samaritan today? And it was a challenge. The story of the Good Samaritan has not only inspired individuals, it has inspired churches, charities and governments to care for those in need. In the 19th century, endless charities were set up to ease the brutality of industrialisation. Christians supported the establishment of trade unions and voluntary organisations which provided support for those unemployed through sickness, injury or market forces. Earlier in the century, government reforms led to the abolition of slavery and the outlawing of children as chimney sweeps. If you've ever read Charles Kingsley's Water Babies, published in 1863, you may remember the two Golden Rule characters, Mrs. Do As You Would Be Done By, and the rather sinister Mrs. B. Dunby as you did. She wore round black rimmed glasses and carried a birch broom for purposes other than sweeping floors. The book was written to raise the reader's awareness and empathy for small children employed as chimney sweeps, and it succeeded in producing a change in social attitudes by engaging empathy and compassion. Just like Black Beauty in 1887 worked for horses, and Uncle Tom's Cabin in 1852 led to a shift in attitudes towards slavery in America. The first labour exchange was set up in London in 1880 by the Salvation Army. The term welfare state was first coined by the Archbishop of Canterbury, William Temple, in the early 1940s. His book, Christianity and the Social Order, argued a powerful case for a welfare state of the kind set up by the Attlee government after 1945. It was a case that found substantial public support. Times change, and today many people would not associate the modern welfare state with the parable of a Good Samaritan. There is considerable public scepticism of the welfare state. The television program Benefit Street created a stir by exposure of the scale of benefit dependency and the right to benefit entitlement which people expressed. The British Attitude Survey in 2015 reported that public support for welfare spending in that country has been in long-term decline. Support for the statement that government should be spending more on welfare benefits for the poor fell from 61% in 1989 to 30% in 2014. The public perception is that welfare has become too centralised and too disjointed and too impersonal. How should we think of the issue of welfare here in Australia? First of all, I think we need to see compassion as highly important. When people lost their jobs in the first wave of shutdowns due to COVID-19, I shuddered when the Minister for Families and Social Services said that increasing payments to job seekers was akin to giving money to drug dealers. Apart from that being factually contentious, the real impact on me was the shock of hearing such an absence of compassion. Lord Griffith had this to say about Christian teaching. He was attending the Chilterns prayer breakfast, you may recall, not addressing a group of atheists or post-Christian Unitarians, Buddhists, Muslims or Sikhs. And his words were, "It is important that we take the whole of Christian teaching into account and not select certain parables and texts. In addressing a large crowd of people, Jesus spelt out the cost of following him and used two parables to explain the importance of prudence. A person wishing to build a tower will first sit down, estimate the cost, and figure out if he has the resources to succeed. Similarly, he told the story of a king eager to wage war on an enemy, but who must first consider whether with 10,000 soldiers he is able to withstand an army of 20,000 men. Compassion may suggest an immediate and dramatic course of action, but prudence is a necessary check to avoid a response which is unsustainable in the longer run." These stories are in the Gospel of St. Luke. In terms of the welfare budget, prudence suggests that at the very least it must be sustainable and have public support. If the parable of the Good Samaritan has one main message for us today, it is that people in need certainly require resources to help them, but money of itself will never be enough. They require personal help, personal encouragement, personal friendship, and, dare I say it, love. And that is what is so pernicious about the system set up by the Centrelink, where clients are treated as potential fraudsters. Benefit can be cut off on the basis of unanswered call, a mislaid declaration of income, or getting a job with no security of tenure or predictability of hours per week. Back to Lord Griffith in the UK. A functional state needs to define its borders, defend them, and maintain law and order within them. Without that, the state becomes dysfunctional. This is not the occasion to discuss the complex political issues Europe faces in response to the scale of the crisis, simply to recognise that dealing with it involves massive challenges, such as ending civil wars and persecution in those countries from which refugees flee, building viable economies in those same countries, and making sure detention centres can process more rapidly claims for asylum. What is not acceptable, in my view, is for European countries to give conflicting signals, to say one day that migrants are welcome, but then to announce that after a stay of months or even years, they may be deported. That's from Lord Griffith. In the parable, the Good Samaritan showed compassion. He also showed prudence in that he promised the innkeeper funds to help the victim get back on his feet again. Who then is the Good Samaritan today? A person of compassion who takes ownership of the situation, offers practical help, concerned with restoration as well as rescue, long-term, not short-term, offers time and money, however small, and is blind to race, colour, creed, gender, status, income and lifestyle. What is important is that we as communities and as a society must be concerned within the long-term flourishing of individuals and families, and not just with offering short-term financial help. Governments in particular have a crucial role to play in addressing the underlying causes of migration, pandemics, unemployment, or whatever ill befalls society. This is easily said, but hugely complex to accomplish. The parable has a personal application for us all. It also has implications for churches, charities, and governments. There is, however, a third dimension to the parable to which Lord Griffith drew people's attention. He said, "I was brought up in a Christian tradition which had regard for the church fathers, men such as Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, Ambrose, and Augustine. The church fathers understood parables not just as stories, but as allegories. For the church fathers, the road from Jerusalem down to Jericho was a picture of human history. The victim is an image of Adam, of mankind in general, every man who has been robbed of immortality. The half-dead man lying on the roadside is a symbol of the universal experience of human history in which mankind has been wounded through alienation, oppression, and suffering." St. Bede said that sins are called wounds because they destroy the integrity of human nature. The Good Samaritan is an image of Jesus Christ himself. By becoming one of us, he has shown us the true meaning of compassion. I believe the church fathers were right when they recognized that we are all alienated and wounded like the victim. We all need healing to become fully the neighbors we can be. We experience that healing through responding to Jesus, who loved us enough to become a neighbor to us so that we can become neighbors to others. And that was from Lord Griffith. Well, that's a very Christian view. But according to Simon Blackburn, the well-known contemporary philosopher, the golden rule can be found in some form in almost every ethical tradition. Religious historian Karen Armstrong agrees that all major faiths have evolved their own version of the golden rule. All the major world faiths affirm the centrality of compassion. Why? Because it works, not just because it sounds good. People have found that when they have implemented the golden rule, as Confucius said, all day and every day, not just doing a good deed for the day and returning to a life of greed and egotism. Armstrong says that you dethrone yourself from the centre of your world and put another there, and you transcend yourself. And it brings you into the presence of what has been called God, Nirvana, Rama, Allah, Tao, something that goes beyond what we know in our ego-bound existence. Why is this not obvious? Well, when there is a big confab of religious leaders, they will often argue about abstruse doctrines or declare this or that to be an anathema. Inveighing against homosexuality always gets you a headline, and there's always plenty else to hate, people who slaughter cows, whatever. We look now not as leaders but at congregations, no matter what pearls of wisdom are dispensed from the pulpit. The preacher may occasionally see waves of mutinous expressions because to some what is important in this life is not to be compassionate, but to be right. There is an urgency, not just for the religious people, but for humanists, for everyone really, to implement the golden rule globally. If we do not manage to treat people as though they were as important as we are, we may not have a viable world to hand on to the next generation. The task of our time is to build a global society where people can live peacefully, share resources, pay a fair price instead of maximizing a profit. We need, whether we are religious or not, to engage in the imaginative act of empathy, putting ourselves in the place of another. Rabbi Hillel, the older contemporary of Jesus, was asked by a pagan to sum up the whole of the Jewish teaching while he stood on one leg. He said, "That which is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbour. That is the Torah, and everything else is only commentary." Any interpretation of scripture that leads to hatred and disdain is illegitimate. Any government policy that leads to disdain and discrimination is illegitimate. Our job is to call out leaders who use the language of them and us, and to uphold the efficacy of compassion. Compassion does not mean feeling sorry for someone. It means doing what you can about it. It may not be much that you can do. You may need to think hard. You certainly need to exercise intelligence. One size does not fit all. You need to be attentive to the feelings of others, to the culture of others. Touching others should not be so spontaneous that you forget we are social distancing. People brought up in a culture where they have a bigger me circle would prefer you to press the palms together or put the hand on the heart rather than a hug or a handshake. Anyone who has need to take over the care of disabled or elderly people in their own families know how the golden rule dictum needs to be tweaked to include an acute awareness of the differences of the needs of the giver and the recipient. As for managing the differences between you and people with radically different lifestyles, I would like you to do this little thought experiment. Picture two people gazing spellbound into one another's eyes. Then imagine two people standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, with their eyes fixed on a common goal. Which scenario creates a better relationship for harmony and working towards making this world a better place? It's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? We don't have to fall in love with each other. We can settle for friendship. We don't have to fixate on differences when we meet people from a different culture, social milieu, or age. If we work side by side for a common goal, differences will fade into the background. We can learn friendship. We can learn to live together and get to know each other if we follow the golden rule. And now the benediction. Words from Adam Lindsay Gordon. Just a little bit about Adam Lindsay Gordon. He was born in the Azores in 1833 and brought up in England. Disdaining his father's expectation of him pursuing a military career, he was packed off to Adelaide. He must have been the black sheep of the family, I think. He spent 2 years with the Mounted Police, was briefly a member of the South Australian Parliament, and invested his inheritance in enterprises which inevitably failed. A brilliant, if reckless, horseman, he's famous for Gordon's Leap in the Blue Lake at Mount Gambier. These words are from his poem, Ye Weary Wayfarer, the final two stanzas. Question not, but live and labour, till yon goal be won, helping every feeble neighbour, seeking help from none. Life is mostly froth and bubble. Two things stand like stone, kindness in another's trouble, courage in your own.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.